This is the fun part.
This is the fun stuff. Yeah, what would happen if we had a podcast that was just us talking shit and it wasn't about books?
Oh, it'd be great.
Do you think we actually get people?
Yeah.
Will we actually get people listening, tuning in?
I think so. People love drama.
Yeah. Everybody would love to know that having COVID last week was only the second worst thing to happen to me.
No, don't say it out loud.
I don't feel like
They are our family, so.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to Book Talk Made Me, the podcast where we're talking about all your favorite books from Book Talk, Bookstagram, you know, wherever you get a good book, we're going to talk about it. Today, we're talking about part two to a book series we read. I'm saying book series lightly because I guess it's fan fiction. It's a fanfic. But going back to who we are, I'm Caitlin. I got Hilda and Bridget here today.
Hi.
Hi.
Don't edit out my high-pitched hi.
Hopefully it picks it up. It never does.
I would say hi one more time.
Post-production. I can't say hi.
Hey, hi. Does not work. So yes, we covered Manacled, the fanfic by Senlin Yu. And episode or part one of that is already out. So this is part two. We're going to cover the last half of this book. I would say definitely go listen to the first one. You're coming into this one. I think you need kind of the background information as to how we got to where we are. But I'd say it's worth taking a read. I think it's still available on AO3 for download in its original form. But I did see, I think after our last recording, that she started to promote the book Alchemized,
I think.
It just doesn't flow off the tongue for me. I feel like I'm saying it wrong, which is not new for us, but.
I say, if you think you're saying it wrong, I'm saying it wrong, period.
I always want to just call it alchemy, but she's calling it alchemized. I don't know. Why are we adding the ED at the end? But this fanfic had been on our TBR for a while, and when we saw it was getting picked up for a full book, we knew we needed to read it in its original Harry Potter form. The fear being that because she doesn't own the rights to the characters in Harry Potter, she can't make money off of them. So I think this story is going to probably be rewritten with different characters. Although I feel like it really lends itself to like a World War II fiction spy novel. And I would watch the hell out of this movie or read the hell out of this book.
Yeah, I would say that the character personalities will probably stay the same and the plot would still stay the same.
Right.
It's the background and building on those characters' history will change.
For us, yeah.
Yeah.
We would definitely need – she would have to do some world building.
Right. But us and everyone who knows it as fanfic will read the new book and say, oh, yeah, that's totally Draco. Oh, yeah, that's totally Hermione, the way when we were reading some other fanfic-inspired book and we were like, why does this remind us of Star Wars? Oh,
because it was
fanfic-inspired. Got it.
Make it make sense. So we would love to know, I'm going to say this off the bat, because I think we heard from a couple of you when we started posting this on Instagram that said that you guys loved this fanfic book?
Mm-hmm. What are we calling it?
Fanfic. Love this fanfic. Would love to know if any of you guys have picked it up after our last recording and are diving into it as well. I will say it's not light reading material, but it's not overly heavy. Like it's heavy substance, but it doesn't make you feel like overwhelming sense of dread that I've seen on all the TikToks.
Well, I don't know. Because I was definitely
darker material.
Feel like the dread is at the beginning to middle of the book.
Yeah.
So I don't, the TikToks were, they're like, they finished the book and they were like boohoo crying. To me, that was not the case because I was like, oh, okay, good. Like I had the sense of dread finishing this book because I thought shit was going to hit the fan.
Me too.
And that was not the case because I was misled by the TikToks. But.
Well, this is a topic of discussion. We're going to get into this. I want to talk about this. Unless you have something urgent to add, Hilda.
No, what I was going to say was like, so because the material is so like heavy and because it deals with a lot of like dark themes, but also just like mental health and like recovering from trauma, even though this does have a quote unquote happy ending, it didn't feel joyous.
No, rainbows and
sunshine.
Right.
So it's not
a true happy ending.
I mean,
no, I want to say it's a realistic happy ending because yes. The other romance novels that we read, every happy ending is the same. Couple fall in love, they mend whatever bullshit third act issue that they had, and then they get pregnant and have a baby, and that is their happily ever after. That is not a real case scenario for everyone in this universe, and I like the fact that the issues that they had before the book ended were issues that were still prevalent at the end of this in the epilogue. Mm-hmm. And it was still continued out generations after Hermione was there. Like it yeah. affected her next generation as well.
Like correct. This wasn't happily ever after. This was they lived and survived.
This was an after. Like you got the after.
So.
It wasn't happily. But let me catch you guys back up and remind you where we last left off. So in part one, we learn that Hermione's been tortured and captured and held prisoner in the dark in isolation for well longer than anyone should be. And of course, in being held in such a manner, she has some PTSD to work through. And she's also brought back into this new environment where the war has been lost. And now all of her friends, Harry Potter is dead. She's held captive. She's forced into this new reality where all the other captives, women captives from the Order and the Resistance, are now going to be surrogates for the high wizarding families who have been struggling to produce heirs under Voldemort's new, rebuild the wizarding families.
Repopulation
efforts. Repopulation efforts, yes. So she is brought back into this. She's sent off to Malfoy to be his surrogate. And this is where we get into some of those hot, tougher scenes because unfortunately she is raped as part of the repopulation efforts. This has to be done every month until she is pregnant. It's also worth noting that Hermione has hidden off parts of her brain, and Voldemort believes that she did this purposefully to hide order secrets. And it is speculated that in order for those secrets to come back out of her hidden brain, that she must become pregnant to do so. So really, Voldemort is looking at this as a win-win. We get her pregnant. We get access to her memories. The wizarding world continues to repopulate. And I get to find out what secret antics the Resistance is up to. So Hermione is struggling at Malfoy Manor. And we find out towards the end of this last chapter, she actually is indeed pregnant. Now, immediately after, and I will say, there is a little bit of a budding romance. She thinks she's starting to get Stockholm Syndrome. Draco's like, no, you're not. Just leave it be. And then all of a sudden one day, her memories just come flooding back to her. So when we last left off in part one, her memories had just returned. So from here on out, this is the second half of this. Now I'm going to start off by saying, I did not look at the chapter. This is typical for me. I don't really go through the first couple pages. I just hop on through to where the text starts and that's where I dive in. So I didn't see how long the flashbacks were.
It's like 25 chapters of flashbacks or something.
It felt like 1,000 because as someone mm-hmm. who's so used to a quick changing POV, I was like, okay. Part five, the flashbacks. I think it started like flashback part one, flashback part two, flashback part three. And I was just like, good God, flashback part 20, I'm still here? Because I'm just so used to a shifting POV timeline where we're going back and forth. And so this part, I struggled with a bit. And that's probably my own doing because I didn't see this ahead of time.
Well, I will say, I don't think I've ever read anything that had like a 30-part flashback. So I remember when I hit flashback number 10, I was like, oh, this must be coming to an end soon. No.
Right, because I feel like 10 through 20 was pretty much the same thing happening over and over again.
That is another thing. It definitely – the themes got very repetitive.
That's because Harry Potter and Ronald Weasley and the Order is fucking stupid. That's all.
Truth. She says
I mean, yes. Yes.
So let's talk about that for a little bit. So when her memories come flooding back, we are back before the Order lost the war. I'd say maybe about like a year out before the Order lost the war. And at this point in time, they are steadily losing. Their numbers are dwindling. Voldemort's order on the rest of Europe is growing increasingly stronger every day. It's not just Britain. Now it's spreading across the continent and they're losing support. I think they even said like France had already fallen. There was some uprisings in Romania. Like there's things were just not looking good for this group, but they were holding out hope. Kingsley Shacklebot is heading up the efforts and Moody. I love this guy. Mad-Eye Moody. Like what a name. Anyway, Mad-Eye Moody is his right-hand man leading up the resistance and kind of taking charge and organizing everything to get resistance efforts, to get safe houses, to get healers. It's really a whole production you're kind of exposed to. Harry and Ron are not the leaders. I don't know why I thought they would be the ones, the Kingsley Shacklebot and the Mad-Eye Moody of this group.
Shacklebolt.
Shacklebolt. I have Shacklebolt in my notes and I'm just saying Shacklebolt. You know, whatever. Bye. Kingsley Shacklebolt. I originally thought that it would be Harry and Ron running the show. So I kind of like that we had experienced people.
No, see, they're considered the leaders in my eyes, but they are not the masterminds. They're not the masterminds.
They're the mascots.
The other thing is, so it's interesting because you have the resistance that's made up of the Order of the Phoenix. And then you also have the Dumbledore's art. Why did I fucking that up? Dumbledore's army, right, which are all the DA people from the series. And then, you know, plus your regular like resistance fighters.
Right. So it's a big group of people. So Harry and Ron are the people we know the best, and they are in the field running missions. They're doing rescues. They're doing intelligence. They're leading attacks against the Death Eaters. So while they're out in the field, Hermione on the flip side is dealing with the aftermath of the field. And pretty much war is hell. So anytime they're coming back off a mission, someone is horrifically maimed, injured, cursed. The Death Eaters have a specific place called Sussex, which is like their secret laboratory where they are conjuring up new kinds of horrific curses. So we hear a lot about this Boyle's curse. That just sounded awful.
The acid curse.
Yeah. Like these things are just – and people are begging for death. Like they don't even want Hermione to save them. And she's kind of the front lines of that. And just like any person on the front lines, you start to get – it really affects your mental health. And I would say she is in the thick of it really affecting her mental health and seeing we are losing this. But no one else seems to realize that we are on the losing side at this point. And because she's really starting to – see the aftermath more so than Harry and Ron, because they're just out like running missions and coming back, dropping off the injured and then running back out there. And not to say that their exposure in the war isn't hard. It's just it's different for her. And so she, you know, had a huge falling out with the order leaders and Harry and Ron specifically, because she suggested that they continue to use dark arts, the dark magic, against the Death Eaters. Like she's like, they're throwing it at us. We got to throw something more powerful back, because up until this point, they're running missions and not using killing curses or anything else like that, that they're getting thrown their way. They're staying in the light, as Harry said. And that kind of becomes their vigilante call, if you will. To me, it kind of felt like a little cultist, like, we must stay in the light. We must stay in the light. Like, who are we if we dabble in the dark? And she's like, you're going to be dead. That's who you're going to be if you don't get your shit together and start fighting fire with fire. So that causes a massive falling out. And I think everyone in the leadership management has kind of given her the side eye a bit. Like, oh, are we losing her? Like, she may be going fanatical. She may be going crazy. And she feels the same way about them. Like, you guys are out of touch with reality. So during – after the mists of this is where we are dropped into her memories – and a spy comes to the order. He wants to run intelligence. He's a high-ranking member. He wants to run intelligence back to the order. And in return, he specifically wants Hermione. So Moody comes against Hermione. He's like, hey, we got a spy. I need you to treat him like a it's almost like a contact. You remember like in Homeland? Like it's very like Carrie and
Brody.
Brody. I'm gonna put this in my notes. Carrie, Brody, Abu Nazir's Voldemort. Like, we're trying. We're working our intelligence here.
Abu Nazir. I haven't heard that name in so long.
That was such a good show. It was so good. And Claire Danes cried in almost every episode. Kind of like the first.
Yeah, no, the first three seasons were really good. Afterwards,
yeah, well, you know. So the spy specifically wants Hermione. Now, why is this person suddenly turning? You know, to put it simply, which everyone sort of doesn't believe, but this spy wants to avenge his mother's death. And in this case, our spy is, who is it, guys?
Draco Malfoy.
There we go. I was like, say it with me. It's Draco. And so this is how he ultimately comes back into Hermione's life. He wants to avenge his mother's death. And although the ultimate cause of her death was fire, it was before that Voldemort tortured her. And because of her torture and imprisonment, kind of forced Draco to take the dark mark to protect her. She became a shell of herself. She really suffered under the torture that she had been given. So when she ultimately passed, he felt like he couldn't save her, and this is his way of avenging her.
Yeah, in this new history of events, after the fight at the Ministry during Order of the Phoenix, Lucius Malfoy gets thrown into prison, and Narcissa gets tortured by Voldemort until Draco can become a Death Eater. And then that's why, again, in this version of events, he kills Dumbledore really early into what would have been the timeline of book six.
So Hermione is sent to kind of work her as a contact. So she is his handler. And every time they meet up in a secret shack location, they're passing information back and forth to each other. Now, ultimately, the information that he passes back is good intel. So he's bringing a lot of good things back. And Hermione's kind of being exposed to this person she thought was a monster. Maybe isn't such a monster after all. Now, we say monster with the heart because he does kill everyone. But we come out over time. He's like, I tried to make it as painless as possible. So he knew some of these folks that he ultimately killed. You know, he did it with a killing curse, but he knew bringing them back to suffer the fate in Sussex or at the hand of Voldemort would have been worse.
I just do want to clarify that when he asked for her, she promised herself to him now and after the war. So it's not just like she's his handler. She's his, period. Like, whether that
she's his handler for now, but she's also his person for life.
Right.
And we don't know what that entails at this point. We're like, what? How? How
is that? Right. And so she assumes it must be some sort of sexual thing. And she's trying to manipulate him into like really falling in love with her while she's doing the handler business and trying to get intel so he can like truly commit to the order and not backstab them.
Yes. And they have to work together to get this information. And like any good spy movie, because they are trauma bonded through the war, they ultimately end up falling in love. But before we get to that point, there's a little bit of repetitiveness, which is what you heard us talk about before, where they meet up, Draco's injured, she heals him, he teaches her to fight. Same thing happens again. He's injured, she teaches him to fight he teaches her to fight because she's terrible at it now. She's been a healer for so long. And they are constantly, I'd say, sort of pushing this barrier that they've erected between themselves before they can fully succumb to their feelings.
But if she gets too close, he insults her and pushes her away.
Right. So he teaches her to fight again. And they're both I think the biggest thing we get is like they're both traumatized. Like just because he's on the quote unquote winning side of the war, it doesn't mean things are any easier for him on what he has to do or the missions that he has to go on. But the information he gives her ends up being really good intel for the order. And it starts to sort of to reinvigorate them in a way. It's a very, as I said, very, very slow burn. So eventually they do fall in love, but man, did it take us what, like 20 chapters to get there. Well, I guess longer because technically she never memories before, you know, whatever. It's a very, very slow burn. And Draco becomes, I think, Bridget's favorite kind of male character. The burn the world down to save her character.
I love it.
He has done horrible, horrible things that clearly weigh on him, but he would do them all again if it meant saving her. So while we learn that this big bad guy isn't such a big bad guy, after all, he's just a bad guy who's done terrible things.
He's just my favorite type of bad guy. Like, fuck the world. I'll burn it down for you because you are my light.
Yes. Screw everybody else in the way, but you get the pass. Let's talk about some other big assholes. You called it out off the top, the top of the episode. Harry, Ron, and I'm throwing Moody in there as well. They are not – they're just assholes. Like, they're just so mean to her.
Moody, at least, like, I get that because he – his main purpose is to, like, mastermind and complete his missions. Like, I don't think he has any relations to any of these people. It's not like Ron and Harry where they're supposed to be her best friend.
Yeah. And they really kind of isolate and insult her.
He called her a raging bitch. Bro. I would have fucking lit that bitch on.
So, obviously, because this is like an alternate universe. Alternative universe. No, it's alternate universe.
Alternate, yeah.
Scenario. I feel like some of the stuff was probably, how do I say it? Like, she took some kernels of truth from the real series, mm-hmm. but then grossly exaggerated to 100%. Get the versions of these guys. But like, the foundation was kind of like still there.
I believe that 100%. And you see parts of those foundations, I think, in the last couple of books and movies of the series. So that's why when I was like, oh, Ron is truly just like behaving the way he was behaving when he had the Horcrux, it's the Horcrux is just pulling out those tendencies of his and like making mm-hmm. it worse. Like, he was still an asshole.
Yeah. No, it was definitely – so in that regard, I would say the writing was really good because it wasn't unbelievable. Because, yeah, you know what? A lot of times in the series, Ron and Harry did not appreciate Hermione.
Oh, I can go in. Like,
that she did for them. That being said, though, the things that kept happening, though, is just very repetitive.
See, I feel like
– yeah.
I feel like the parts that were, like, super obviously repetitive were done on purpose because it was trying to link back her present self and her past self. Yeah. Like, the things that she specifically said in regards to, like, what she first noticed about Draco and how he's so handsome and, like, a fallen angel and stuff like that. I think those things were purposely done. But also, like, I don't know for sure because she didn't have an editor.
Yeah.
And then some of the reoccurring things, it's because, like, it felt repetitive because it was the same actions, but it was, like, Draco and Hermione trying to overcome, like, internal barriers between themselves. So there wasn't much they can do outside of their little shack, you know?
Well, I think it had more to do with she gets injured. He goes in. This had to have happened at least
twice. The chain of events happened a couple times.
Yeah. Like two or three times where like she goes, she gets injured. He shows up. He kills everybody to save her.
Oh, see, I feel like those parts though.
Chains of events happen in other series that we read so often. It's just that the chain of events happen in a different environment. So if you think about it in ACOTAR, it's like Feyre goes off on a mission. Reese doesn't show up. The friends come and save her. She goes and confronts Reese, or Reese does something in return. And like it's the same formula, just in different parts of – why am I forgetting the name of the land? Perthian. And I think if
that's like Harry Potter land.
If we could have moved outside like of the shack, really, right. That they were, you know, shacking up in,
it wouldn't have been so.
It wouldn't have felt so repetitive, right, as a reader, because then you're dragging, right? Because everything's happening basically in the same spot for them.
It's happening like off screen, and we only see them in the shack. Yeah,
that's a good observation.
Should be.
That was a good observation.
Shacking up. She's got a podcast.
You know, it only took 3 years or 2 years in the making.
When they're shacking up in the shack.
Yeah. So another notable presence is Snape. Now, Snape gets a little bit of a pass for me.
Snape. Dumbledore.
Dumbledore. Couldn't Dumbledore. Do it. Had to do it. I'm like, it's going to come out at some point during this episode, and Hill's going to hate us for getting that stuck in her head. But he's actually a triple agent, which I would have loved to learn a little. Like, I felt I didn't get enough Snape in this, and you don't say that often, but he's a triple agent. So he's working for the Order, but Voldemort thinks he's a spy in the Order reporting back to him, but he's actually reporting back on Voldemort's efforts. So he's a triple spy. But ultimately he's on – what you need to know from that, if you didn't follow that, the triangle web of lies, is that he is on the side of Harry and Ron and Hermione and ultimately trying to work against everything that Voldemort's doing.
I'm sorry. Hold on. Wouldn't he just be a double agent?
They said the word triple agent, and I picked it up and ran with it. So
no, isn't a double agent when you're just working for the opposing side?
Correct.
So he's a triple agent because first he was a Voldemort follower, then he switched sides and he was a double agent with the Order. Then Voldemort came back and he pretended that he was just working for Dumbledore, but was actually working for Voldemort in order to get his information for Voldy, because he was also always a ride or die. But he was fooling Voldy and he was actually still working for the Order. So he's a quadruple agent?
I feel like, yeah. Yes. So he's tangled web of lies he weaves. But to me, I felt like he was the closest person to Hermione than anyone else. And later on, I felt actually showed some like awkward Snape compassion for her, which was kind of endearing in its awkwardness, I thought.
Like, I don't think Snape had redeemed himself in the actual series. Like how everybody's all like, oh my God, after all this time or whatever. Or whatever page that's on. Mm-hmm. When he was befriending Hermione and was helping her, I was like, oh, I kind of like you now.
I was also very afraid he was going to, like, betray her. I was like, no, don't do this.
So, again, I realize he was not the star of this production. I don't feel like his ending was worthy of him.
No. Well, I guess we can talk about that now because we don't really get to it too much. But ultimately, he is killed in a resistance uprising in Romania. So when her memories are, I guess, back before in part one of this podcast, but we learn that Snape has been sent off to deal with Romania. And then in the end, we learn that he ultimately passed from that.
Yeah. And he was supposed to come back and basically escort her to a safe house so she could leave.
I was hoping for that like final reunion between the two of them. Because he was the one champion she had throughout the entire series, even though he wasn't that present.
I loved their wacky little bond. I wish we got more of it.
Also, so, super wild that Ginny thought they were hooking up. Like,
I thought that was pretty funny,
though. So there was a part where, you know, even all of Hermione's friends and people she deals with on the regular are like, are you okay? You seem off. And she's like, why wouldn't I be off? Like, I got severed limbs and body parts and intestines hanging out coming to me. Like, why is that normal? And I was like, well, maybe you should just find someone to, like, you know, work through those feelings with.
They're like, just bang it out.
Right. And Ginny suggests that be Snape. And everyone was like, bleh. Nope. No, thank you.
I feel like there's this, like, huge part about Hermione working in as a healer that people just overlooked. And like, I feel like I don't want to do her injustice by not addressing it as well. It's like the mentality of deciding to go into a profession that you did not care about because you saw no one else was doing it because you wanted to take one for the team and you had to be a person that was valuable to the team in the end. But then to patch them up and after they have gone to battle, patch them up and then see them in the next day or the next week dying all over again. It's like, what am I contributing to this war? And you know it's because their side, the light side, is not doing anything remotely close to damaging as Voldemort's people are doing. So she's like fighting an uphill battle in the sense, and everyone else is just gaslighting the fuck out of her left and right, and they're like, no, how could you? How does that make us better than them if we start like fighting a good fight? I don't know. Maybe you'll have people at the end of the day. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
She's smart. Harry has more credit. So Ginny Speaking of shacking up, Ginny has been shacking up with Mr. Harry Potter.
Shocker. And
come to find out, Ginny is pregnant. But because Harry has got so much going on at the moment and feels it under immense amount of pressure to fulfill the prophecy, Ginny begs Hermione to keep it secret. So Hermione, of course, being the smartest woman on the block, concocts some kind of crazy contagious illness that
like
would –
like splattergoit or something.
Yeah, something crazy that would keep her in isolation for upwards of 9 months so that she's able to hide away her condition. But Hermione, who of course is able to see her as a healer, can still go check on her. This keeps her safe, keeps Harry's mental state safe, and so they agree to keep it on the DL.
Did you guys like Ginny?
Huh?
Did you guys like Ginny in the series or this book?
That's a good question. I neither liked her nor disliked her. I'm glad she got some more battle cred at the end, but I didn't want it to be her.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that part a little bit later on. So as I mentioned, Draco gives them good intel and the resistance actually starts to rise up as a threat again once more. And throughout this time, every time they meet back up at the shack, Draco is tortured more and more and more because Voldemort sees it as, hey, you're not doing your job and you are not killing enough or getting enough information out of people. So why does the resistance keep coming back up and up? And so he is doing his best to give all the information to them, but he's also paying dearly for it. So after finding what they think is the last Horcrux, they head into a big battle at Hogwarts thinking, we've got all of them. Now Voldemort can finally be defeated. And Hermione concocts a bomb to get them in there to bring down the defensive warrior. So remember, she's a healer, but she's also very skilled at potions because she's been training with Snape all this time. So she mixes up some potions and she gets the team to just put them all out there and boom, the defenses are down. So right before this big battle, I mean, obviously we, knowing the story of Harry Potter, know that Harry is the last Horcrux, but Hermione realizes it too late from an offhanded comment from Madame Pomfrey about something about their magical signatures being mixed with something else. And Hermione has like a light bulb dread-filled moment of like, holy shit, he is the last Horcrux. He's about to walk into battle and he doesn't know this. So she gets over there. She tries to warn him. Ultimately, he's like, it doesn't matter. He's resigned kind of to his death. Like, I have to do this. I have to try and fulfill the prophecy. She ends up telling him Ginny's pregnant in a last-ditch effort to like, please save him. But ultimately, he heads out into war. It's not a spoiler because they've said it at least 3 times now, but Harry dies. Harry dies. And everyone dies. It is very not great, to put it so eloquently.
It's a bloodbath.
It's a bloodbath after that. Voldemort is clearly weakened, but you've got all these very healthy Death Eaters. And Hermione barely makes it out alive, and that's due to Draco. But she does take down a good amount of people before she goes. Draco does step in to whisk her back to the safe house, aka their shack. Once she's nursed back to health, Hermione realizes, like, holy shit, things went sideways. Things went real bad. We have got to get back to the safe house to try and rescue Ginny. I promised Harry I would take care of her. So they get there and realize that the safe house has been raided by Death Eaters and Ginny is gone. And she is absolutely horrified to think she knows what they're up to in their crazy factory at Sussex, coming up with all the curses and pretty – I think we said it before. It's kind of like an Auschwitz kind of vibe of like
– yeah, like they're experimenting on people
and torture, and it's really not good. And she's horrified to think of Ginny pregnant being there and what that would mean, knowing that she's carrying Harry Potter's kid. So this is where a badass Hermione mode is activated. So she, after promising Draco, like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I did it. She goes back and tries to stage a raid at Sussex to try and get Hermione out because she promised, again, Harry that she would. She makes her bombs and in a badass mode again, blows up most of the prison. The factory, right? It was Sussex, right? Where she went and blew it up.
Yeah, it's like a research center. There's a lot of things going on in the compound.
Research center, prison concentration camp-esque experimentations happening there. And she's like, fuck this, fuck all y'all. Bomb, 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 bomb. Blows up everything, blows up everyone. And she considers this a merciful death if they're in there, because she's like, I saw people we rescued from there. Like, no one made it out alive. No one was going to make it out of here alive anyway, except she was trying to get Hermione. So she tries to find her, but ultimately she doesn't. But she gets taken – she takes down, again, another dozen of Death Eaters before being captured by Umbridge. This is why in the beginning of the book, when everyone's like, you got Hermione Granger? The Hermione Granger? Like, this is what she's known for, is being this badass. So before she is ultimately led back into her cell where she was imprisoned for a while, she got to witness some pretty sad torture. All her friends are hung to die on Hogwarts, I believe is where they were.
All the Weasleys are dead.
All the Weasleys are up there. Harry's hanging up there. Ron's hanging up there. Like, it's just – it wasn't good. It wasn't good. And Hermione, I think, was – not Hermione. Was Ginny up there at that point?
No, it was Mrs. Weasley.
Mrs. Weasley, yes. Yeah.
I think she did.
She came back at some point, because I remember everyone saying she was the first body they brought back.
So it was like a decoy for Ginny.
Yeah.
It was an actual, I was going to say,
we haven't gotten there yet, but yes.
Sorry.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler.
So as Hermione's kind of resigned to her fate and she's like, oh shit, I'm captured. Like, this is going down. She goes back to her training with Legilimency. Is that how we said that word?
Legilimency.
Legilimency. And she tries to file all of – because she knows she's about to get tortured. Like, she knows this is coming for her. So she tries to file away all of her information on Draco, because she does not want to give him up. She loves him. She wants to protect him. And she's trying to get them all back filed away in the back of her brain. And in the middle of doing this, the manacles are slapped on. So these are the manacles we find out in the first part when we read this, that subdue her magic, completely cutting it off completely. So she is stuck in a state with her brain sort of not fully organized and her memories are missing. So she realizes almost immediately, it was like, oh God, I have to remember. I have to remember. I'm going to forget. And then she is thrown into the cell, and then that's where we meet her in part one. So going back to present time. So we just learned all of those things from Hermione's memories. We're back now in the present time at Malfoy Manor. And if Hermione thought having back all her memories would be easier, it doesn't. Because you can't just open up the brain and a flood of gates happen to pour in and there's no consequences. Of course there's going to be consequences. And she is mentally and physically going through it right now. But at the very least, she's able to remember that she does love her Draco. And she's still kind of – what's the word I'm looking for? Recognizing? No, reconciling. She's still reconciling the fact that I did love this man, but he did rape me. And this – again, it's not great for the mental state to have to work through this. Her mind is permanently damaged, even though it is fully unlocked. And so, again, if we thought they would be like, lovey-dovey, you remember me. It's awesome. No. Draco is awkward, he's cold, he's traumatized because of what he had to do to her, knowing that she did not remember him. And she's traumatized, and it takes them a while to really get back to who they were. But they now have to also get back to who they were, but come to terms with their new reality of that we're having a baby, I'm pregnant. And all the health issues now that her unlocked memory and headaches get into. Draco is pretty sure he's not going to survive much longer. And he makes a backup plan with Snape, as we said earlier, to help bring Hermione to Ginny. Surprise! Ginny's alive! Because Draco, not always an asshole. And even though there was a body that was brought back, he found a decoy with red hair and made it so that Ginny was whisked away to safely, where she could safely have the baby and be helped, I love this, by house elves to help raise them.
Yeah, he sent the Malfoy house elves to go help her.
And he would go there often to check in on her.
And she would be a bitch to him.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So to answer your question, Bridget, I don't know how I feel about Ginny, but I don't think I loved her.
I don't like her. Should I go and set her now?
Let's do it after. Let's get through this, and we'll get back to thoughts and feelings on Ginny.
You got it, dude.
So they have to come up with a plan. because Snape was supposed to come deliver her, and we found out he died in Uprising. So, like, that plan is scrapped. Now we're going to come up with a new one. But they also have to deal with Draco's wife. Yes, he's got one of those. It's weird. She's kind of a bitch. No one likes her. Also tried to poke out Hermione's eye, which was unpleasant to read. Also, as a problem here, Lucius. Yes. My brain was like Lucian. Anyway, Lucius is back at Malfoy Manor. Excited? No. No one is. Everyone hates his asshole. Because
that fucking guy is off his rocker.
Like, blub. Even his wife was like, Draco, he's bleeding again all over the library. Like, it's not. She's had enough of this. And in one of her please make him do something battle arguments, he comes up and just cuts off her head. He's like, I've had enough of you. Adios. Then everyone's like, oh, shit. Well, that solved one problem. Not a lot of love lost for Mrs. Malfoy.
He's such a nice guy.
I also love that Draco orchestrated that entire thing to get his wife killed by his dad.
Did he? I didn't even catch that.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, Hermione calls him on it.
This man's like 10 steps ahead. He's trying, right, because he believes he's going to die. So he's like, there's no loose ends here. I got to make sure we get a plan back. We also have to deal. So check. We figured out what to deal with Draco's wife, but we do have to figure out what to do with his father. And we do have to figure out how to remove Draco's dark mark. Every surrogate has a trace to their master through the dark mark. And specifically, Hermione also has one to Voldemort. So if they remove the dark mark, they're going to know something is up. Something is amiss. Draco has tried 9 times on all the Death Eaters he's captured, and they always die. So this is not looking good for our boy. But don't fear, Hermione's got a plan. And what does it involve? Phoenix tears. Are those easy to get? No. So they're kind of back to square one.
But wait. Who has Phoenix tears?
From centuries old. It's Lucius. So he is fucking unhinged, that man. And he tries to go after Hermione, like, after stalking through her window, because Draco has warded her left, right, upside down. Like, there is no getting into her side of the manor. But Lucius conjures a portkey and, like, slips it in with a spoon that's delivered to her from the house elves. And when she grabs her spoon to eat her breakfast, whooshed off to the side of the manor where she's not protected by the wards, and immediately in, like, his weird torture dungeon. And she's like, ah, fuck, this is not good.
Isn't that the cage that Voldemort was using with his mom?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So full circle trauma there for Draco. Things get rough. Ultimately, Draco ends up saving her, and Lucius now becomes part of the plan. He's captured, and they tell him the plan. They're like, hey, heads up. I need you to get some Phoenix tears, and then I need you to kill yourself because that's part of the plan. And he's like, basically kind of agrees to it, I guess. And they also tell them about the full story about his mom and how she was tortured. And so now he kind of, I don't want to say becomes a sympathetic player in this game, but he's just less in their way.
So what we're supposed to, I guess, get from all of that is that Lucius becomes unhinged because Narcissa died. And so because he's able to talk to the painting of young Narcissa, who basically is like,
keeping a watchful eye on Hermione.
Yeah, and like, put our son first, or this is our son's best hope.
Mm-hmm.
Then he very reluctantly decides to go along with the plan.
Right. And the plan, in case you're wondering, is we're all bought in 100% on Operation Cut Draco's Arm Off. So, like, no big deal, right? Hermione is a skilled healer. She's like, I got the books. We're going to practice this. It's going to be fine. And they realize it's like a ticking time bomb situation where they're like, okay, arms off, 30 seconds to departure before the Death Eaters get here. So it's a little bit of a high stakes situation. Ultimately, hand gets cut off. Phoenix tears help. After they leave, Lucius blows up the manor. He's no more. And everyone presumes they died in that blast as well. They ride off to a safe house. And then from there, go to another safe house. So then they're whisked off to another house, a safe house, where we meet Ginny and James. So they are hidden away on some kind of Asian island. We don't really know, like, where, but that's kind of the vibe we got. And we learn that Draco had been bringing them supplies, taking care of them, keeping up the wards, setting them house elves to help raise the babies and help deliver the baby. And really, they help hide themselves. Hermione ends up crafting a prosthetic, which I lovingly called Robot Hand, for Draco. And she imbues some magic and smart thinking into it, where now he's able to use his magic robot hand to cast magic, which is pretty cool. So the book ends.
Is he Robo-Reeve?
Oh, is the Robo-Reeve?
Is he the Robo-Reeve?
Robocop? And that brings us all the way almost to the end, where the book ends with Draco telling her the world did not deserve Hermione. And if you're like, oh, what happens next? Don't worry, there's four parts of epilogues. And if you're me, I was like, oh God, here's where it goes. Like, I was waiting for, just like Bridget said, I was waiting for shit to hit the fan. I was like, oh God, like we're getting this false sense of good and it's going to come ripping my heart out. So I read the next
four. I feel like I couldn't enjoy it because I was on the edge of my seat waiting for something. Yeah.
So worried. So instead of breaking out all the epilogues, I'm just going to tell you what happened in all of them. So in The Baby is Born. Now, how are you guys saying her name?
Aurora.
Aurora. Okay. Because I probably want to call it Aurora, but it ends with an E instead of an A. But I'm like, that kind of sounds like an auror, like a fighter. So like, this is tough. Aurora. Okay. So baby girl Aurora. Aurora sounds better, but whatever. Baby girl Aurora is born. And throughout her childhood, yes, she's got Ginny. And yes, she has little baby James to play with. They try to socialize her. And it's kind of sad because she can't. Like, it's clear they have rules. Like, she can't call them by their actual names because Draco is a known war criminal. And Hermione, everyone thinks, is dead and would probably be brought to trial for her own war crimes.
Yeah.
For war crimes. And so they have to be hidden by glamours. They have very strict rules on that. They don't get to go out often. And after several years pass, Ginny decides she has to go back. She has to go back to Britain. She's got to see this ending. So throughout this whole time, we've known after the Horcrux is gone, and even really before, Voldemort was dying. And even more so now, he's barely holding on, but also he's barely holding on to the power that they have in Europe. So Hermione leaves to go kind of avenge Harry Potter's death a bit, I guess.
Ginny, not Hermione.
Ginny, yes, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Ginny leaves to avenge Harry Potter's death and leaves the baby with James and Draco. What ends up happening is Voldemort dies.
Leaves the baby with Hermione and Draco. Leaves baby James with Hermione and Draco. What did I say? Leaves the baby with James and Draco.
Oh, James is the baby. It's the end of the night, guys. I'm out of my wine. We're wrapping up.
I get it.
Yeah. So Hermione and Draco have both babies. We'll leave it at that. So Ginny goes back to Britain and teams up with an elite team of MAC USA. So I'm assuming that's like the Magic USA.
There's the Magic USA and the International Confederation of Wizards and whatever.
Yeah.
So what I imagine is like the US and NATO.
Right.
Or finally like the UN. Decide to step in.
Right, yes. Right. So the US finally decides to step into this brawl, which also I'm like, this took you a shit ton of long time, but
sounds pretty American.
It does. And of course, they're the ones that go in and, you know. Anyway. So Ginny, led by an elite team of MAC USA Aurors, end up going in to take out Voldemort. Almost every single one of the MAC USA Aurors die, but Ginny ends up giving the final death blow and her first killing curse, first and only killing curse, to Voldemort. And she is seen triumphantly dragging his corpse out of wherever he was. I forgot where he was. Hogwarts, maybe? Dragging him out. And this is what I want to talk about too, because I didn't want, like, I'm glad she killed him, but like, I felt like that death wasn't hers to claim. Like, I wanted it to be.
She didn't deserve to be the one to kill him.
Correct. Exactly. And I didn't like that. I wanted it to be like Hermione coming back into her power and be like, you're on my list and crossing that list off today.
I mean, the thing is, like, again, this goes back. Is Ginny in this book or in this version likable? And I don't know.
I don't think she is at all. 100%. She's not. So like Jenny in the actual book series, I loved. In the movie, she was portrayed differently. And a lot of the redeeming qualities that she had in the book was stripped from her, along with Hermione in the book, because it you know, was produced mm-hmm. in America, or not in America, but like it was produced in a world where like men are always going to be the leaders and the heroes and all this stuff. And they're not going to champion women and women's rights and kid movies like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, this movie came out so long ago. And yeah, besides the point. So the things about Jenny that I really did not like is that she was, if you want to, she was the type that was like, I'm as good as the guys. Not, she was, how should I say this? I am part of the gang because I am better than the guys. Like, she was one of those girls that were like, in order to be them, you got to beat them. And so she was the fighter of the group. She was obviously in love with Harry, but she was making very careless and stupid mistakes, which made me really upset with her. Like, she purposely went and got protection so she wouldn't conceive a baby and turned around and said, oh, well, I just thought one time wouldn't matter. Bro, what the fuck do you mean? One time you thought it was going to matter. That was a careless mistake. And now everyone else is paying for it. She puts Hermione in this very tough situation where now Hermione, who already had issues with Ron and Harry, is now lying to them to their faces. She's lying to everybody else. And it's adding more things onto Hermione's plate that she did not need, because even Ginny did not appreciate Hermione for what she is. She saw her Absolutely. As someone who's useful. And that's the shit that pisses me off about Ginny. Ginny used the situation to her benefit. And it was like, it could have, how much of the story could have been avoided if Jenny wasn't such a fucking bitch? And then she would turn around and be like, well, maybe you should just fuck Snape and like bang it out, or you should go like release some tension. But when she finally found someone who loved her, Draco loves Hermione, she judged her the entire time and tried to convince Hermione to leave Draco at every step of the process, until Hermione was like, you did the killing curse. Tell me, what was it you were thinking about during the killing curse? And she goes, oh shit, I was thinking about the love that I have for Harry. And then she goes, okay, great. So what do you think Draco was thinking about the entire time he killed all those people? Because you know from the beginning that when I told you that Draco is undercover, is he was killing all these people in defense of his mother, because he really loved his mother and he ended up loving Hermione. And he was fighting for the people that he loved in his own way. And yeah. It was like, Ginny, why are you so fucking dense? Like, why? She was also there with her high, it's the light way to do it. The yep. light, right way to do it bullshit.
Yeah, the high and mighty, this way is, can be the only way. Yeah, I really.
That was a lot of feelings.
But I've been bottling it up. Well.
Which I think perfectly describes everything that happened. I didn't care for her.
I think it's because I've like really had an invested like, I've been invested in Ginny's storyline for so long because I loved her so much in the books, and I wanted that redemption for her in the movies as well. Like, I wanted the credit she earned, like, because she was truly yeah. like such a badass character in the book, and she did more than just dating around Ron and Harry's friends and yeah. like being part of that like secret society club that Hermione was at. Like, they cut so much of her character down to just being a flirtatious woman with a backbone versus like a true part of the order.
Of the team.
And they did the same bullshit with Hermione. So it's like, great, cool. But like this whole book, I feel like everybody who loves it probably sees themselves a little bit like her, as Hermione.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone feels unappreciative. They probably suffer from some sort of trauma or some sort of anxiety. Because like Hermione, before all of this happens, we find out she's had anxiety. She's just been masking it from the beginning. She's had issues being accepted in her friend group. And even when she became she found out she was a wizard and went into school where she should be accepted, people were still bullying her. And that's why she was die hard, ride or die friends with Harry and Ron.
Even until the end, Draco's like, why do you keep sticking up for them? They don't like you. And she's like, but they're my best friends.
But they haven't been acting as her best friends for years. And I think that's what like hurt me the most, to see Hermione choose Harry and Ron over and over again when Draco is just looking for someone to love the way she is looking to love someone. And like, you already know Draco is suffering all this trauma, and the only person he ever loved and wanted to protect was his mother. And then he finds a person who is similar to his mother in the same situation of being unappreciated in the same trauma. And now he has latched on to Hermione because, hello, trauma bonded. Like, that's a real thing. And it was just so fucking sad to see her pick Ron and Ron and Harry over and over again. And Ron and Harry, like, were just horrible to her.
Horrible.
I could go on and on about how horrible that was.
I do think, though, at some point that Harry and Ron represented the war and the outcome of the war. That, yeah, she was picking them, but ultimately she was picking winning the war. Because right. She knew how important Harry was specifically to the war and like the war effort, because he was the mascot. And then apparently Ron kept Harry together.
Yeah, it's true.
I just really...
deep thoughts.
They were. And all of them were accurate. All of them were accurate. And it made me realize no one in this book I ended up liking besides Hermione and Draco. Everyone was an asshole.
Even Draco knew he never deserved Hermione, but he was still trying his best until the very end. And you could see that he was stuck in his own trauma, in his own mind, when he kept repeatedly trying to keep her secure on this island. And you know she was still suffering from her brain damage and the anxiety. She couldn't leave the island. Like, yeah, they had to conceal their identities, but she would go into a full-on panic attack, which risked her rupturing more of the barriers in her brain and potentially like
Hermione was very mentally and physically, because of that, wounded from what she did in the war.
Right. Which, and then for them to hit with that last line, was ready to like punch everyone I came across.
So Aurora and James grow up and Ginny becomes a high ranking member of whatever new government system they set up. I forgot what it is, but she comes high ranking. They all go back to Britain. Aurora wants to go to Hogwarts, and initially, you know, Draco and Hermione are heartbroken to see her leave, but they know, like, because of the reasons Bridget mentioned, like, she's like, I can't leave this island. Like, we're wanted criminals. Yes, we're different than, like, we did what we did for reasons, but, like, the world isn't going to see it that way. And Aurora and James kind of have this conversation where they're like, we want to set the record straight. Like, no one knows about this. And they have this full conversation about it and the injustices their parents will face because they just – no one knows the story. And the story ends with a picture of Hermione sitting in between Harry and Ron. And the caption of the photo is – and it's from a textbook they're reading, a history book, the war – on the war that happened. And it says, Hermione Granger was a non-active member of the order and did not fight, which is – a horrific gut punch to see all she has suffered and given up and done.
And that's like her footnote.
And that's what she's known for. And it really like got me in my head, because I was like, how many other people have done amazing things that were just not ever fully realized? Like, how many other people? Getting
the credit for it.
Right. And I just was like, God.
Yeah, just think about how many textbooks you have read that it's considered history, that it was actually rewritten to benefit the oppressor.
Yeah, or even just left out women's contributions as a whole, because ultimately she was pretty fucking badass member of that society, of the order, who actually kept it going on well after everyone else failed. So I think that's why maybe so many people end in tears reading this book, because it's just the gut punch. It's just the gut punch.
This is why it says it's a happy ending, but it doesn't feel like a happy ending.
Right, it's not happy. I mean, yes, Hermione, Draco's still alive and well. No one else died. The couple
gets there happily ever after, meaning they made it and they survived. But I think there's a lot more written between the lines that everyone who reads it has to digest and process, because – yeah, we're talking about Hermione and Harry Potter and bullshit like that. Yeah. But like, how much of this is relevant in today's world, and how much of this are we witnessing and it's getting swept underneath the rug as well? Mm-hmm. And are even there- with us in our work and our careers and stuff like that, how much work are you guys putting in? And I think this is relevant to what's been going on this week. How much work have you guys put in? How much time, sweat, tears, how much stress you have got, like felt for jobs that just sweep you underneath the table and out the door.
Because your contributions aren't noted. You are not even,
your contribution's not worded. Like in 10 years, your name will only be remembered by a handful of people, and they will never realize how much work you put in for what you were doing. And that, I think, was reflected with Hermione. And I think that's why a lot of us, especially women, probably resonate with her in the story, because we have all been in that situation. And we probably all feel like that. And no matter what type of job you have, no matter if you're a stay-at-home mom, a career woman, or whatever it is you do, this is the reality that almost all women face.
Yep, the sad, sad reality. So everyone on TikTok, which I think originally piqued our interest, showed their reaction videos to reading the end of this book where they're just sobbing. And so am I emotionally devastated and gut punched? Yes, but I don't think I sobbed the way I thought I was, because I think earlier we said that we were couldn't enjoy any of the epilogues, even though as sad as and based in reality as they were, we were just waiting for someone to horrifically die. And like, we didn't get any happy endings. Like, none of it was solidified. So I didn't cry at the end, but curious to know if you guys did.
No, but just that heavy sense.
Yeah, like it has stuck with me for, I think just a week ago, and I'm still thinking about this ending.
I ended up reading this other fanfic, Hermione fanfic, that was an outright comedy, slow burn. But I needed some levity, because it was really deep and harsh.
Yeah, I had to dive into some slut.
Smut. I needed.
We're going to dive into some smut to be some slut in our mind.
Like, that I needed to dissociate from this, because this was hitting too close to home.
Yeah.
And I've been bottling all these feelings up since I finished this book, because I wanted it to be live for the podcast.
This was good. So. Bridget, you brought all the thoughts and feelings. It was beautifully said. I don't think I could have said it any better.
Bridget has something to say.
Sorry, I hit the wrong button.
I was like, are we just capturing hand motions now?
It's like you can keep going.
All right. So that is Manacled, our full complete synopsis on what happened in this book with all of our thoughts and very heavy feelings. And you can find us on Instagram at booktalkmaybe_pod. If you guys are reading this or have read it and had similar feelings, we'd love to hear from you guys. Are there as well? Our DMs are always open. So we're going to end on this episode with a thinker. We're going to leave you with that. That Harry Hermione was a non-active member of the Order who did not fight, and urge you all to fight more. So from us tonight.
Get the correct version of history out there.
Yes. Yes. Snaps all around. I'm getting all like teary-eyed about it. So from.
See, this is why this book was a heavy hitter.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Sorry.
Okay, so we'll leave you guys with that one, and we'll catch you next time. I don't even know what we're reading next, but we're reading something.
Lady of Darkness.
Lady of Darkness.
Which I've started. I should know this. Oh. So we're reading Lady of Darkness next. So far, so good. I will say.
Yeah.
So we'll catch you on that one.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.